I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We were really fortunate to have Jeffrey Ward with us a couple weeks ago. He is the writer of the, along with Ken Burns, of the documentary on the Roosevelts, which appeared on PBS and had a phenomenal viewership. They had a 5.8 rating on Sunday, September 14, and an average audience of over 9 million viewers. Joined Theodore Franklin and Eleanor for the family saga, and I haven't seen it. I'm missing 2 hours, I think, but it's so, so well done. David Woolner has written a piece that caught our attention, What the Ken Burns Documentary on the Roosevelts Can Teach Us About Our Past and Also Ourselves. David is a senior fellow and Hyde Park resident historian at the Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt Institute. His special areas are U.S. foreign and economic policy under FDR. For 10 years, he was the Roosevelt Institute's executive director, co-editor of FDR's World War, Peace and Legacies, and FDR and the Environment. David was a historical advisor for the Roosevelt documentary. We haven't had a chance, after we all watched all of those hours, to talk about what we saw and the importance of this documentary and the role that all three played in American history, really. So this is a good hour for us to do just that. Our phone number on air is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And Professor David Woolner, thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Didn't you think it was just wonderful that here we had 2 hours a night, all these nights on the Roosevelts, and so many people watched it?
Oh, yes. It was very gratifying for a person who's been spending a good deal of time studying and writing about the Roosevelts. I was really delighted with the reception the film received and, quite excited about the way it might further inform the American people about what the Roosevelts were really all about.
Mm-hmm. What does it mean to be a historical advisor? What do you do? Did you sit down and give history lessons?
Well, there's about five or six of us that were asked to view an earlier version of the film and read the script. And we watched an earlier draft of the film and reacted to it. And then we all were given copies of the script as well. Spent a week actually in Walpole, New Hampshire, with Ken Burns, and it was quite a fascinating week. And then, of course, issued written comments about the script after viewing the film.
Mm-hmm. Such a massive project it was. I can't imagine the hours that went into that, picking the film and going through all the film. What an enormous undertaking.
It was, but it was a real delight.
I imagine.
The writing of Jeff Ward and the direction of Ken Burns really was just absolutely outstanding. And, you had a number of veteran historians there that had been around the block a few times, and we were all deeply, deeply moved by the film. And, more than once you had to sort of pass around the Kleenex.
You have written in a piece that caught our attention, as much as we may admire the leadership of the Roosevelts, none of their accomplishments would have been possible without the support of the American people. And then you talk about this process that you need the cooperation of public figures and the public. Tell me how that played out during FDR's time and how crucial that was and how you get that, too, as a public leader.
Well, when it comes to Franklin Roosevelt, to FDR, of course, he took office on the 4th of March, 1933, which was, probably one of the darkest moments in American history. At the height of the Great Depression, you had unemployment at over 25% nationwide, and in places like Chicago and Detroit, unemployment running up upwards of 50%. So the country was really unrecognizable. You wouldn't recognize it today. I mean, there were shanty towns in Central Park in New York City. I mean, it was just extraordinarily different place. And there was really no government intervention to speak of in the economy. We did have reforms from the Progressive Era and so forth, but the sort of role that we are used to the government playing in managing the capitalist economy was something that really hadn't been built yet. And so the years that Franklin Roosevelt was in office, when he launched the New Deal and gave us Federal Deposit Insurance and Social Security and so forth, were years when was a real transformation of the relationship between the American people and their government. And I think, you know, part of that was Roosevelt's ability to communicate, as he did over the radio through his fireside chats and the letters to the White House. You know, as soon as he assumed office after the 12th of March, he gave his first fireside chat on the banking crisis. You know, tens of thousands of letters poured in. They had to hire, triple the staff at the White House to handle the mail, and people really felt they had a relationship with the president, that he was looking after their interests, and that bond really lasted throughout the Second World War.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you talk to veterans about what they were doing on April 12, 1945, Republican or Democrat, you know, they'll talk about losing FDR at the height of the war was like losing your own father.
Yeah, I heard that certainly from my father and people of his generation. It is amazing. When you just said that, I was reminded of the pictures of the people in breadlines and the millions of people without work and the shanty towns all over the country. And it struck me. I mean, I've always been struck and thought so deeply about what Abraham Lincoln walked into with all these states seceding and thinking, good Lord, how can anybody take that on? And yet FDR was taking on, you know, all these people who are unemployed and everything just falling apart in this country. It's hard to imagine one person could take they had the stamina and the mental prowess to take on all of this. What a huge thing to have to do.
Yeah, and let's not forget he did it from a wheelchair.
Exactly.
This was a man who had to have help literally getting out of bed in the morning and, you know, used a wheelchair to get from point A to point B and preferred to sit in a regular chair when he was not moving around, and of course mastered this idea of sort of trying to walk with his steel braces strapped to his legs, which was actually quite painful. So it makes the story all the more extraordinary that you have a man who's essentially paralyzed from the waist down, lifting a paralyzed nation from its knees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those series of images and all he was doing at Warm Springs for so many people were also incredible. His critics, and I'd like for you to talk more about this, because this, oh, it's all socialism, it's socialism. Whenever anybody wants to criticize somebody, they use that phrase frequently if they feel that they're too left or they're too progressive or whatever, they're too socialist. Tell me about the amount of criticism that he received for the reforms that he instigated under the New Deal. Did he get a lot of, oh, this is just taking us down the road to socialism?
Well, absolutely. I mean, critics, and it's important to realize that FDR's critics were both Democrats and Republicans. You had conservative Republicans in the South who were some of his most vehement critics and opponents, really, as well as conservative Republicans. Some of his greatest supporters were liberal Republicans. So the political dynamic in the 1930s was much different and actually probably much healthier, because debates were not between parties but really over ideas. Which is where they should be, but he faced fierce opposition and was accused of being a fascist or a socialist and so forth and so on. But when you look around the world and realize that the crisis that we were in was really a global economic crisis, mm-hmm. not confined to the United States, and that alternatives to democracy were springing up all over the place, from fascist Italy to militaristic Japan and of course Nazi Germany, democracy itself and capitalism itself was really under siege around the world. And I think what we sometimes fail to realize is what Roosevelt was really trying to do and successfully did was to save capitalism.
Mm.
How do you make capitalism work for the average American? How do you make things like the banking system safe? How do you regulate the stock market and make sure people are not engaged in fraud? You know, if you look at those initial reforms, it's interesting that really the first major task they took on was the reform of the financial system. You have the Emergency Banking Act, which recapitalized the banks in a way that was not that different than, say, what happened in 2008. And later on in 100 days, 16 major pieces of legislation in 100 days, which is a record nobody's ever even come close to. You had the Glass-Steagall Act, which has separated commercial from investment banking and created the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, which we still have to this day. All part of this first 100 days. And then, of course, the Truth and Securities Act, you probably don't realize it, but there was more regulation about buying a horse in 1933 than there was about buying a stock. So,
oh my gosh.
So the Truth in Securities Act was people had the right to know what they were buying. And then, of course, a year later, the Securities and Exchange Act, which set up the Securities and Exchange Commission. So, putting rules in place in a capitalist system so that it would function properly, that's what they were doing. He didn't nationalize the banks. He didn't engage in socialistic policies. He tried to fix capitalism.
David Woolner is our guest, a good Midwestern guy. I think he went to the University of Minnesota. We always have to mention that when we're talking about our guest's credentials. David was a historical advisor for the Roosevelt documentary. He's senior fellow and Hyde Park resident historian at the Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt Institute. And we're talking about that wonderful documentary, what we saw, and he wrote a piece that caught our eye, what Ken Burns' documentary on the Roosevelts can teach us about our past and ourselves. We've spent a lot of time on this show talking about income inequality and how it has reached levels that we haven't seen since 1929. So we're going to talk about modern day and what we, if we pay attention to it, learn from our past and learn from FDR in particular as we carry on. Here's how you can reach our conversation, 800-486-8655. What did you think of the documentary? What do you take away from it? What moments were particularly memorable for you? What about the importance of FDR? We would love to hear from you. 800-486-8655 for you to join our conversation with Professor David Woolner. I'm Kathleen Dunn with Lisa Nalbandian in our Milwaukee studios announcing our fall membership drive, which I think you know about. You rely on WPR for in-depth discussions like what we're having now. What great fun it is to talk about the Roosevelts. We rely on you to keep programs like this on the air. Your gift right now of whatever you can give really does make a difference. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
Last hour was quite incredible. We heard from
so much going on.
Oh, my goodness. And we heard from 43 listeners.
Thank you so much.
But it's a brand new hour and a brand new goal. And that goal is 33 pledges.
And you'll want to make the pledge because your gift of any amount will enter you in the drawing for two tickets on a WPR trip. Help us meet the goal and get entered in the drawing. Make a contribution here at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You can rely on Wisconsin Public Radio for information, for entertainment, for history, just like this hour every single day. You enjoy this program, The Kathleen Dunn Show, but also The Joy Cardine Show, The Larry Mueller Show, Sober Pastor on Your Health, Car Talk, and so many others.
So support the exciting mix of shows that you enjoy on this station with your contribution at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Kathleen just mentioned this a couple moments ago, but it's worth mentioning again. Anyone who pledges this drive will be entered in a drawing for two tickets on a WPR trip. And here are your choices. They're pretty incredible. The Rhine River, Alaska, or France. So you could be the lucky winner when you make a pledge of any amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And you don't have to pledge to participate. Just send a postcard with your name, address, email, and phone number to WPR Trip Drawing, 821 University Avenue, Madison, 53706. Send a postcard or make a pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Hi, I'm Joy Cardine. I'll be taking a WPR trip to Alaska, and you could join me. Here's how. This membership drive, we're having a Choose Your Own Adventure drawing. If you're the lucky winner, you and your best friend can choose from among three possible trips. When you choose Alaska, we'll take a cruise along the coast, making stops to visit towns, glaciers, and gardens. I hope we'll see plenty of wildlife at a safe distance. Your pledge of any amount gets you entered, but no contribution is necessary to win. Sustainers, you're automatically entered. Learn about all the trips and the fine print at WPR.org/drawing. Or enter with your pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Good luck.
Make your donation in support of the programs you count on. WPR.org, 888-202-2552. I'm Kathleen Dunn with Lisa Nalbandian, and we're asking for your gift to Wisconsin Public Radio during this fall membership drive. Your gift might be $5 a month, $100 a month. We appreciate it. And to tell you the truth, we count on your gift.
And you can take the opportunity this drive and become a sustaining member of Wisconsin Public Radio. Once you set up a monthly amount from your bank or credit card, your support goes to work immediately towards the programs you rely on.
Because your sustaining donation automatically renews each year, your support will always be current. You don't have to wonder if it's your time of year to give every time that you hear a pledge drive. Become a sustainer right now. Gift of $5 or $10 a month at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Listeners, just like you, provide the most significant share of WPR's budget. And that support is invested in programs that deliver the greatest value back to you.
And your contribution keeps independent public service radio on the air for you and for the entire community. It's very important. Please give now. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And once you go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552, it's super easy. It'll take just a few minutes of your time and a gift of any amount, maybe $5 or $10 a month.
The donation comes back to you every day in the form of great programs. So show your support. WPR.org, 888-202-2552. Give as generously as you can.
One thing you can do is think about your support to Wisconsin Public Radio as a way to invest in your future listening. Give us just a few minutes of your time and your donation in any amount, and in return, you'll get so many great programs.
Donate at WPR.org, 888-202-2552. In just a few minutes, you will have made a wise investment. It pays dividends every day.
We're looking for 26 pledges in the next 36 minutes. And as an added bonus for your pledge of any amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, you will be entered in that drawing for two tickets on any WPR trip. And that's another, by the way, great reason to be a sustainer, because you're already entered in the drawing.
In this pledge, we're offering something useful for your pledge of $5 a month or more. It's a handy WPR logo secure ID tag. You put one on your key ring and you stick the other to your phone.
Then, if you ever lose your phone or your keys, these tags will help you get them back. So you can protect your phone, your keys, and you can protect your public radio station when you pledge $5 a month and ask for the ID tag at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
A sustaining membership is convenient for you. It provides reliable funding for WPR. Set up ongoing monthly donations from your bank account or credit card, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Abby from Fitchburg says, WPR has been my favorite radio station for many years, at home and in the car. Thank you so much, Abby.
Thanks, everybody, for your pledges. Thanks, Lisa. Again, it's WPR.org, 888-202-2552. We're talking about the Roosevelts this hour. We spent many hours watching the documentary, and now we're mulling over what we saw. David Woolner, our guest, senior fellow, Hyde Park resident historian at the Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt Institute. His piece, What Ken Burns' Documentary on the Roosevelts Can Teach Us About Our Past and Ourselves. And we're welcoming phone calls for him. Our number is 800-486-8655. Tim in Hammond is our first caller for you. Hi, Tim.
Hello.
Hello, Tim.
Yes. I found the series just outstanding. I couldn't turn it off once I started watching it. I had some meetings several nights. I couldn't see it. I went on the Internet to watch the rest of it. I've never done that before.
Great.
I just thought it was an outstanding series. The photography of Sagamore Hill in the different seasons, the interior shots of there and of Hyde Park and of Warm Springs, it just made me want to go to those places and kind of see the pictures and or see the places where the story took place. I thought an outstanding series. And I had a question for your guest. About a year ago, I read a book called FDR's Funeral Train. And it was fascinating about his death and the train to Washington and then up to Hyde Park. and it described an incident in the east room of the White House where the White House service was held. I'm just wondering if your guest has ever heard of this or can verify it. But they said when the service was over and everything was in a rush, Eleanor asked to be left alone with the casket in the east room. And so everybody cleared the room, but a porter stayed behind and stood behind a curtain and observed that Eleanor took her wedding ring off and placed it in the casket.
Hmm.
And the way it was written in the book was that it was a sense of betrayal of the, that woman being there with the portrait painter at the time of his death. And I know in the series they talked about the daughter helping arrange, you know, meetings with that woman and the difficulties that caused for Eleanor. In the book, the fact that she removed her wedding ring, they put the twist on it, that it was kind of a sense of just betrayal at that point at the end of his life. Can your guests verify that incident at all or know anything about it?
Hmm.
Well, it's a very interesting observation. I cannot verify that she, in fact, did that. I can say that, you know, Eleanor Roosevelt and Franklin Roosevelt had a deep political partnership, and they both had, I guess you could say, circles of friends. And, of course, there was this incident in the early 1920s with Lucy Mercer, and we don't know the extent of the relationship that Franklin Roosevelt had with Lucy Mercer. What we do know is that there was talk of divorce, so there must have been something there. But we really don't know much about the actual details of what kind of involvement we're talking about. But, you know, this was pre-polio. Once Roosevelt was in the White House and approaching this point of kind of exhaustion in 1943, he was looking for comfort. And both of them, both Eleanor and Franklin, tended to socialize with other people. They were, they had a very close and respectful and, I would say, loving relationship. But, you know, Eleanor Roosevelt, for example, never went to Franklin's happy hour, which he called the children's hour, where he would, at 5 o'clock, make his cocktails and invite people to come in and just relax. And they actually had a rule that you couldn't talk about work or politics, just, you know, and she, so, you know, she had her own friends and acquaintances, and many of these people overlapped. Many of these people dined with the family. They weren't necessarily exclusive type relationships, but he did promise that he wouldn't see Lucy again. And around 1943, Franklin reached out to his daughter, Anna, who had moved back into the White House, and she arranged for Lucy Mercer to visit him on a number of different occasions. And he also spent a great deal of time with his cousin, Daisy Sukley, who was often there when Lucy was there as well. And these were people that Franklin just, you know, socialized with and relaxed with and tried to relieve some of the stress of office. Mm. I do not know for sure about this story about the about what happened in the East Room of the White House. I do know that there was a deep sense of betrayal for a time on Eleanor's part, but I also know that Anna and Eleanor kind of reached a point of reconciliation over this incident at the end of FDR's life.
Hmm. Well, maybe you can, as the historian, investigate it further and let us know, right?
Yes, I'm sure I could find out,
right.
But it's not something that I can verify
right.
At this moment.
Yeah, that's all right. Thank you, Tom, or Tim, very much. Tom will be coming up. And there was this, I guess I wasn't fully aware of the really enormous sadness of Eleanor's childhood. She just had such an unhappy childhood, didn't she?
Yeah, she was orphaned at a young age. Well, you know, her father was an alcoholic, and so she had a very difficult time. She ended up living with her grandmother, who was you know, not particularly kind to her, and used to call her both her mother and her grandmother had this nickname for her, Granny. So yeah, she had not a happy childhood, and was kind of a lonely person. And I think, you know, had a hard time in adult life forming close bonds because of that.
Mm-hmm. Mike in Madison sent this message that evidently was not in the documentary. The Daughters of the American Revolution refusing Marian Anderson, a black singer, to perform in Constitution Hall. Eleanor found out and invited the singer to Lincoln Memorial on Easter Sunday.
Yeah, that's true. Marian Anderson did perform, and she was turned down. And Eleanor also worked behind the scenes, among others, to arrange for her to perform on the National Mall, which was a very stunning moment.
Yeah.
And, of course, Franklin Roosevelt once addressed the Daughters of the American Revolution, who tended to be somewhat nativist in their point of view, somewhat anti-immigrant. He opened his address, "My dear fellow immigrants."
We're welcoming phone calls. I also want to remind you that we are in our fall membership drive. So as we carry on with this conversation, you can pledge for this show. But also, we had Jeffrey Ward with us as we all were in the middle of watching the documentary. And Jeffrey was a great guest as well, talking about the Roosevelt and the series that many of you watched, I know. Our pledge number is 888-202-2552, 888-202-2552. Tom in Green Bay is with us now. Hi, Tom. Hello, Tom. Don't know where you went. Call again. Jack in Kenosha. Hi.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for the program. I found the series fascinating. The thing that I like the most about it is oftentimes people will tend to look at great people, and when they discover weakness or frailty or sins in them, they begin to diminish them. I think these people are examples of people who had great frailty, their own even weaknesses and sins, if you will, but they went on to do great good. And I think they're to be admired even more for that, that in spite of whatever weaknesses or even darkness they had within them, they did great things for other people.
David.
Well, I couldn't agree more. I mean, one of my favorite lines from the film is, "Black care never sits behind a rider whose pace is fast enough." Theodore Roosevelt, of course, escaping to the Black Hills after the death of his first wife, Alice Lee, and his mother on the same day. You know, all three of them had tremendous challenges and tragedies in their life. Eleanor Roosevelt's death of her father from alcoholism, and her mother dying when she was about 8 years old. And then, of course, Franklin Roosevelt's contraction of polio, you know, at 39 years old, is sort of the prime of his life. They all face tremendous challenges and personal triumphs and personal tragedies, and I think that is what makes them so interesting and also so admirable, because they rose to the occasion and pursued, help for the public, and a public career in spite of these challenges.
Thank you, Jack, for your call. Doug in Sheboygan. Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Doug.
Hello?
Hello, Doug.
Hello. I've always been curious, and it didn't seem to come out in the documentary. Where did the original wealth of the Roosevelts come from? Considering how many of them essentially were alcoholics, I think, where did it start from in the first place?
Well, they were involved in the shipping trade. You know, they emigrated to the United States in the middle of the 17th century from the Netherlands. And as you know, the Netherlands is a great commercial and trading nation, and New York was originally New Amsterdam. And so the family had deep, deep roots in early New York history. They made their fortune in shipping, largely, and somewhat in banking. The Delano family was also involved in the China trade in the 19th century and had considerable wealth. So when from Franklin's mother's side, the Delano side of the family. So it was a family that was of considerable wealth and stature from a very early period in American history. And, you know, something akin to a kind of an American aristocracy.
And thank you very much for your call, Doug. We have some lines open, and we're talking about the incredibly wonderful, at least I thought it was, Roosevelt documentary, the Ken Burns documentary on PBS that just ended not that long ago. And David Woolner is our guest. He wrote a piece that caught our eye, and we thought, well, why not talk about what we all saw together, what Ken Burns's documentary on the Roosevelts can teach us about our past and ourselves. We have yet to talk about what the challenges of the past, what they may have to do with challenges of today. I do want to talk about income inequality with him some, and we will do so momentarily. And welcome more of your phone calls to be on air with us, 800-486-8655. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Kathleen Dunn with Lisa Nalbandian, and this is the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Membership Drive. Our goal is to keep bringing you in all the days ahead topics like this. We love history shows, and I know you do too. We've talked about the Roosevelt, certainly Abraham Lincoln. We've talked about Woodrow Wilson, and you name it. We've talked about Calvin Coolidge and Hoover and, well, almost every single president. Not all of them, but many of them. And we'll keep doing this. Your support will make that happen. So please give now. Any amount makes a difference. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And this is a really great time to help support everything that you love about Wisconsin Public Radio. We have a goal this hour, and we need 20 more pledges in the next 21 minutes to make that goal.
And when you give, you'll be entered in a drawing for two tickets on a WPR trip of your choice. Any pledge of any amount is your chance to enjoy European towns along the Rhine River, explore Alaska, or escape to France.
So get entered in that drawing. Make your donation at this very moment. You can go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
I'm not sure if you know this, but at the end of the hour, we often hear our guests say, either on the air or they say it off the air, thank you for your great listeners. You deserve to be complimented. You're thoughtful, you're active, you care about these issues, and we really thank you for contributing to the quality of WPR programs with all of your questions. And a thank you for your financial support as well, because it makes the conversations possible. So if you have not yet pledged, do it now. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
When you became a regular listener to Wisconsin Public Radio, you programmed the radio station in your car and at home. That was such an important first step. And now we're asking you to take the next important step and become a financial supporter of WPR.
The step from listener to supporter is easy. Decide how much you want to give. $5 a month is a great starting point, and make your pledge. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
We all support, we all pay for all the things that are important to us. And when you stop and think about it, Wisconsin Public Radio is probably just as important to you, or even more so than some of the things that you spend money on.
Life wouldn't be as vibrant, as good without WPR, and WPR wouldn't be as good without listener support. Your gift right now, WPR.org, 888-202-2552, pays for the programs you enjoy and you rely on every single day.
Rise. Department 1 of the Superior Court is now back in session. Honorable Judge Wilson presiding.
Please be seated. Attorney Mailer, it's your turn to cross-examine the expert witness.
Thank you, Your Honor. Now, sir, remind us, you're a soil scientist?
That's right.
And you said the soil in the victim's garden matched the soil on my client's shoes?
Yes, they were both silty with an unusual amount of copper.
Would you say that soil is ideally suited to growing cucumbers?
What I'm sure of is the soil in the victim's garden is the very same soil in the shoes of the accused.
There have been many coyote sightings in the neighborhood recently. Is it possible that coyote droppings are enriching the soil for better resistance to tomato blight?
Your Honor, cucumbers, coyote droppings, tomato blight?
Attorney Mueller, I have to request that you stick with the issue at hand, and that's defending your client from some very serious charges.
Certainly, but can't we just ask about common garden insects before moving on?
Yes, Larry Mueller could be a defense attorney, but isn't it better that he's hosting the Larry Mueller Show on WPR? Your support makes WPR programs possible and gets to the bottom of that tomato blight problem. Give now. Here's someone to tell you how.
Pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Lisa Nalbandian joining me, asking for your support of WPR during our fall membership drive. Your gift might be $10 or $20 a month. Whatever amount you choose is a really great amount.
At WPR, you choose how much to give. And you know what? Any amount makes such a difference. So here are some suggested amounts to kind of get you thinking. Maybe you should give the same amount you pay for Netflix each month, or maybe the same amount as your cable bill.
Or for coffee, which, like WPR, is probably something you look forward to every day. Pledge now. You pick the amount. Your pledge makes a difference. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
We're here today asking that you make a contribution to support Wisconsin Public Radio. But we're also asking that you give an amount that feels right, that's comfortable for you. Some give $5 a month. Some give $100 or more a month.
Whatever the amount, we'll use it to support the programs you enjoy and keeping your source for information around for a long time. So give now whatever you feel you can give. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
We have 20 more pledges to go to make our goal and about 17 more minutes to get there. So your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 really, really helps. And it'll enter into that drawing for two tickets on a WPR trip. Sustainers, once again, a big plug for the Sustainers. No worries, you're automatically entered.
You can also ask for this WPR Local Who's Secure ID tag with your gift of $5 a month. These tags are similar to a luggage tag. They are smaller and they don't show your contact information.
So what you can do with these tags is you can put one on your key ring, maybe stick the other one on your phone. And if you lose any one of these items, they'll have a way. They'll be able to find their way back to you. So you can ask for these handy tags when you pledge $5 a month, which is $60 or more a year, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Make today the day you increase your support by WPR by $5 a month if you're a sustainer or whatever you would like to increase it by. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
So your pledge right now makes such a difference at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you for all of your support.
Absolutely. Thank you. David Woolner is our guest, and we're talking about the Roosevelt series and what we learned from the Ken Burns documentary. David is senior fellow Hyde Park resident historian at the Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt Institute. And we're welcoming phone calls for him. Our number is 800-486-8655 for you to be with us on the air. Rich from Rhinelander posted this on our Facebook page, David. Both Teddy and FDR understood that the game of capitalism can't be rigged and be fair. Teddy was the trust buster and FDR the Four Freedoms president. Yet today we operate under the axiom of some businesses are too big to fail. That said, how would the Roosevelts have viewed too big to fail?
Well, I think the Roosevelts, were concerned about concentrated wealth. Distorting democracy. This is something that both TR and FDR concerned themselves with. And when you get to the point of the Great Depression where, you know, the free market system had essentially failed, it had collapsed at the beginning of the 1930s, under the strain of tremendous inequality that had emerged in the late 19th and early 20th century. Franklin Roosevelt said at one point, for too many of us, political equality we once had won was meaningless in the face of economic inequality. When a small group of people concentrate into their hands control over other people's property, other people's money, other people's labor, other people's lives, life is no longer free, liberty no longer real, men can no longer follow the pursuit of happiness. So he had this strong sense that this fundamental inequality in the United States that had emerged at this terrible moment had to be corrected. And he said in one of his tremendous speeches in 1936, against economic tyranny such as this, the American citizen could only appeal to the organized power of government. And, there's been a lot written about the New Deal, whether it was right-wing or left-wing, and Roosevelt has been characterized as not really having an ideology, and I think to a certain extent that's true. But what both he and Teddy Roosevelt believed in was the use of government to try to pursue the common good And in a situation where the free market system had collapsed, Franklin Roosevelt really dedicated himself to trying to find solutions to those problems and to using government to affect those solutions. Mm.
So let's jump ahead to 2014, and if we've done so many shows on this income inequality and how it's affecting all of us. You write in your piece that income inequality has reached levels not seen since the Gilded Age. What keeps us from taking on what all the Roosevelts saw as a threat to democracy?
Well, I would say that we've been fed a kind of line for the past 20 to 30 years, what we might refer to as free market fundamentalism, where you know, the market is supposed to solve all problems. And unfortunately, I think both the Democrats and the Republicans have bought into this argument. And we've turned away from this notion that government really has a critical role to play in not only sort of providing a level playing field and equal opportunity for all Americans, but making sure that our free market system works and provides the basic kind of levels of security that that all Americans deserve. And when you think about things like unemployment insurance and Social Security, these were measures that were put in to help mitigate the worst excesses of unregulated capitalism. And I think we've lost the balance between, the free market and the rules that we need to put in place in order to make sure that we don't get these great distortions. And I think that's where we are today. We have a situation where the economic inequality between the wealthy top 1% and the rest of us has distorted the American economy and has affected our ability to provide jobs and a decent living and affordable education and things like this for the vast majority of Americans.
Stephanie in Woodford. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Yeah.
I just had one criticism while I was watching the documentary, that it really presented the great man view of history. And I know, limited to time, but now I was hoping that your guests could talk about the movement politics that were associated with the period leading up to the establishment of Social Security and how the grassroots, the left, labor, was interacting with the president, how much that was going on and how much that had to do with his success in getting those things passed through Congress.
And stay with us. I want you to talk more about great man view of history. But
okay.
Yeah. David.
Well, the guest is absolutely right. I mean, this film, to be fair to Jeff Ward and to Ken Burns, they wanted to write a film and produce a film about the Roosevelts themselves and about their personal lives and how they overcame many of the great difficulties and tragedies that we've talked about and still managed to accomplish incredible things. So I think the film was more focused on that intimate side of the Roosevelts, and that's why it was called An Intimate History. But the guest is absolutely right. For example, Social Security was very much inspired by the Townsend movement in California, Dr. Francis Townsend calling for a universal pension for everybody in the United States over 65 years of age, $200 a month that they had to spend within 30 days to keep the economy stimulated. There were lots of ideas out there, and there were lots of grassroots movements in the early 1930s and mid-1930s, some on the left, some on the right. You had Huey Long's Share the Wealth movement, where he demanded that everybody should have a guaranteed income and a home worth $5,000 or $6,000. So there were both practical reformists coalescing around ideas. There were also a lot of demagogues like Long or Father Coughlin promoting ideas that were really demagogic and, to a certain extent, you could say totalitarianism, either on the left or the right. And labor was very involved. So, yeah, absolutely. And Roosevelt recognized this. I mean, he told Sidney Hillman once, who was a great labor leader in the mid-30s, you've got to get out there and push me to get these things done. So, and essentially that was part of what I was saying in the piece that I recently wrote about the film, is that these were great leaders, there's no question. But they were partly great leaders because the American people rallied around what they were trying to do and trying to accomplish.
Mm-hmm. In the great man or woman, in Eleanor's case, too, view of history would be, Stephanie?
Well, I think your guest is well prepared to describe that because he's just addressed it really well. Well, you know, that the way that we learn history through a textbook, you know, 500 years mashed together, focuses on a few great leaders, and, you know, there are other theories of what makes things happen, no matter how the right person is in the right place at the right time, depends on what masses of other people are doing, and it right. all comes down to economics and material concerns of people.
Yeah, but somebody's got the microphone and does the fireside chats, right?
Yeah, and what makes people great leaders is their ability to listen and respond to the needs and the ideas that are rising up among all the other people that are.
That's absolutely correct. Mm-hmm. And many of the ideas that Roosevelt ultimately pushed through, everything from federal deposit insurance to the setting up the Tennessee Valley Authority, many of these ideas were initiated either in Congress or had been advocated by members of the public. So it's a very dynamic process. But you have to have, you know, you have to have a political system in place that can respond to those needs and listens, as you say. Listening is very, very important, both on the congressional side and on the executive side. And the public was demanding help and change and relief, you know, in this great depression, and the government was listening. And not everything that Roosevelt did worked. We have to admit that there were many failures in the New Deal programs. But, you know, the line that got the greatest applause in his first inaugural was not "the only thing we have to fear is fear itself," but this nation is calling for action, and action now. And he responded to that, and people supported him, and that support made a huge difference.
Stephanie, thank you so much for your call. And David, thank you for being with us. We'll be in touch again. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathleen. It's been my pleasure.
David Woolner, Senior Fellow and Hyde Park Resident Historian at the Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt Institute. As we reminisce, well, some of us haven't made it through all 14 hours. I need two more hours to go, and I will have made it through the Roosevelt's an intimate history. So, so well done. We thank David for his time. Tomorrow at this time, Diane Ravitch will be joining us for an hour on the future of public education in America. This is also our Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Membership Drive. I'm Kathleen Dunn with Lisa Nalbandian. We're looking for 9 more pledges during this hour, so let's do it. Let's do it. At WPR, our contributions are the single largest source of funding. That's you. So your gift keeps all these programs that you value on the air. Make your contribution, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Well, it was 9 pledges, and now we need 8
all
more
right.
pledges in 8. The next 5 minutes. So let's do it. And as an added incentive, a pledge of any amount enters you in a drawing for 2 tickets on a WPR trip. So donate right now for your chance to travel along the Rhine River in Europe, see Alaska, or tour the best of France.
Your pledge will keep this program on the air, and it enters you in the drawing for a trip of your choice. So make your contribution, WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
You've been enjoying this conversation. I mean, this really, like, thoughtful analysis on the Roosevelts. And it's just an example of kind of the really thoughtful historical analysis that we have on this show.
So take a few minutes to make this hour and all the hours you have yet to hear possible. Choose a gift amount that's good for you. Make your pledge at WPR.org, 888-202-2552, or it's 7 now. We need
7 now. Oh, that's great. So when you listen to WPR, you know, you can know that we always are thinking about you, the listener, first. We can continue to serve our listeners and our communities because of the support we receive from members. And we have 600 members of WPR's 9XM Leadership Circle.
9XM members support WPR with gifts of $1,200 or more each year. To make this leadership gift of $100 a month, go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Supporting WPR right now is such a great thing to do with just a few minutes of your time. This is all we need: your name, your contact information, how much you'd like to give, and how you'd like to pay.
And your gift will support the programs that keep you connected to the world and involved in all of these important issues. Give now, WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
We need six more pledges.
All right.
And after the six of you pledge right now, you're going to feel so good every time you turn on that radio, because you're going to know, hey, I kind of made WPR possible.
Well, and that's true. You do make it possible. So you do, because you were listener supported. Your pledge not only guarantees our future, it guarantees your future listening. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We're looking for six more pledges in the next, 2 minutes to stay on track this hour. And remember, when you pledge, you'll be entered to win 2 tickets on that WPR trip.
Thanks, Lisa. Thanks for your pledges, everybody. 888-202-2552. Until tomorrow.